Welcome to Sausage on a Fork, a podcast dedicated to the UK's longest-running children's drama programme, Grange Hill. My name's Neil, and in each episode, I'll interview a former cast member about their life before, during, and after their time on the programme. Okay, welcome to the latest episode of Sausage on a Fork, and I am absolutely delighted to say that I have been joined by none other than Amanda Meeling, who played Stacey Edwards. Amanda, welcome to Sausage on a Fork.
Thank you, babe. Thank you. I'm so excited. I must say, you and the listeners will probably remember more than I do. Yeah. I have to get my husband to tell, you know, explain my CV. Or what was that character's name? So, yeah. So it's going to be interesting. You're going to be doing most of this.
Okay. All right. Well, what we'll do, you'll do a lot of the talking in this bit, is we'll start the way we start every episode. And if you can tell us how you first got into acting.
I went to Italia Conti on a Saturday.
Right.
I was about 3 years old. And I remember the interview being in this wood-paneled, dark, quite austere office, and this very stern lady saying she's too young at three because she won't be able to understand the instructions, but go and watch a class and, you know, come back when she's, you know, a bit older. Went to watch a ballet class, and I was just taken with what the girls were doing. I got up and stood in the middle of them at the bar, which I could barely meet, and just copied what they were doing. The principal of the school happened to walk through the hall at that time and went, well, maybe she's not too young. So I started Italia Conti at three. And then when I was six, they got the license for theatrical license to be an agent. And that was it. I got my first job. I think that was just William when I was six. Oh, no, Julie Andrews. Julie Andrews Christmas special.
All right.
Directed. Her husband was Blake Edwards.
Yeah.
Who was the director of Pink Panther, of, what was it? Oh, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Wow, right, yeah.
You know, I'm this great, great director.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I remember that was at Elstree Studios, which is where I ended up doing Holby City. And I remember the floor manager walking me into the studio and saying, just be careful of all the big cables. And in my head, I was going, why are you talking to me like that? I now come to know it was like past life experience.
Right.
I absolutely, everything felt familiar. It's not like I felt comfortable.
Yeah.
I know where I am. This wow. Absolutely feels. And the only other time I've had that was when I was filming in Dublin. Right. I was doing Jake's Progress for Alan Bleasdale. And again, I had that kind of past life experience. I was walking through Dublin, heart racing, going, oh my God, this is all so familiar.
Wow.
So that Julie Andrews was the first job. And then, you know, the various, just William, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
And then of course Grange Hill was on.
Yeah.
And I was like everyone, a fan of that when it first came out. It was radical. It was really controversial. This is up until then, you know, what was shown on TV of children was, you know, Enid Blyton.
Just William, like you said.
And everything. And there are these kids going, flipping heck. And,
yeah.
You know, yes. And it's funny over the years, I've had people come up and say, oh, mummy wouldn't let us watch it.
Yeah.
You know, oh, yeah, I can tell which family you came from.
Yeah.
Brilliant. We loved it because it was a close. It was like, yeah, this is, yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely.
More like the school than I know.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Can I just ask then, because you said you were at Italia Conti. So was there anyone else at Italia Conti with you who we might know of?
Do you know what? It's a really weird year that I just things go like that, don't they? It was in my class was Bonnie Langford, Lena Zavaroni,
wow,
Sadie Frost, Ruth Davis, who was in
yeah, Penny Lewis,
Games, yeah.
yeah.
Daughter of Beryl Bainbridge,
Yeah.
the writer.
Yeah.
You know, it was just an extraordinary year.
Wow.
It was just one of those, that intake that year.
Yeah.
I see Bonnie occasionally. Sadie, in actual fact, I meant to text her today. Frances Raphael, who played the lead in Les Mis and is still, you know, still looking gorgeous. You can imagine the complex. I went to school with all these gorgeous girls, and there I am, frizzy hair, freckle face, you know, and I'm with these ultra gorgeous girls. So that inferiority complex is still.
Well, I mean, we should talk about that hair, to be honest, because it was pretty spectacular. To be fair, wasn't it?
When I say to I told my boys, oh, no, no, because they've both got kind of afro hair. And I went, oh, no, Mama had a big fro. And they were like, yeah, yeah. And I showed them the picture. And they're like, oh, my goodness, you really did have a big fro.
But really well maintained, I've got to say. There wasn't a hair out of place there, was there? okay.
I just patted it down. That's all I used to do.
Right.
I used to pat it into a shape.
Excuse me. Okay, so we'll talk about Grange Hill then. So obviously you said you were a fan and you started in series three, and it was the second intake of kids that we'd seen start at Grange Hill. So what was it like going from seeing the likes of Tucker Jenkins, Trisha Yates on telly to all of a sudden you sat in the same room as them and you're working alongside them?
It was. Well, it's an odd thing because I've always grown up in the industry.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm never impressed by anything, but it was my favourite programme.
Right.
So it was a bit kind of like, I think the idea of joining it.
Uh-huh.
Of course, joining it, and yes, Tucker Jenkins, all the girls fancied Tucker Jenkins, everyone. Bit of a bad boy, you know, that kind of Irish charm about him, whatever, you know, it's just kind of like, I think I was really excited about working with him, but there were loads of a lot of my friends were in it. So,
nice. Yeah.
So it was just the idea of joining I mean, we used to get 9 million viewers.
Yeah.
It was massive.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So to be joining my favourite show was really exciting. But I wasn't intimidated. I was just thrilled and a bit kind of giddy about, you know, meeting Todd. He turned out to be my first kiss.
Oh, right. Wow. There we go. Bit of an exclusive there.
Literally behind the bike sheds.
Brilliant.
It literally was. And we got caught by the first AD.
Right. I mean, that is a Grange Hill story in itself there, isn't it? Behind the bike sheds, getting caught. Brilliant. Okay. And obviously, you were playing Tracy Edwards, and Tracy was best friends with Dwayne Orpington, played by Mark Baxter, who is a massive friend of the podcast. He's a big supporter of the podcast, so we have to give a big shout out.
Oh, big shout out to him.
And they were always riding bikes to school. I'm assuming you could already ride a bike and you didn't need to learn to ride a bike for that.
I didn't need to learn that, no. But there were that you know, series, there was a whole thing about bikes being nicked.
Yeah, and it went all the way through. I mean,
always. I loved my bike. I loved it. It wasn't, did I have a chopper? I didn't have a chopper. I had a chopper in real life, which I loved.
Yeah, no, it was a proper, I don't want to use the term, and I don't want to sing it, but it was a girly girl's bike, if you know what I mean. Like, Dwayne had the sort of the racer bike. It was a very different type of bike, shall we say, there. Okay, and in that episode, in that first episode, Dwayne's bike, the lock wouldn't work, and Dwayne's bike ended up getting pinched. And in the next episode, Dwayne had a black eye that his dad had given him because the bike had been nicked. And that's, you know, even at the time, although that probably went on a lot more than it does now, it was still pretty shocking to see something like that on a kids' TV program.
But that's what I'm saying. This was a show. It was gritty realism. You know, it was the truth that these things were going on. You know, in those days, they wouldn't have shown kind of that kind of physical abuse from a parent and the consequence of it. And it was, I just thought it was really, really good in not shying away from all those things.
The thing with that was, as well, when the teachers were asking Dwayne about his black eye, he just said, "Oh, my dad did it," and it was sort of like, "Oh, okay." There was nothing like sort of nowadays. It would go on. It would, you know, it would be a massive, massive thing. Ran rightly so.
Oh, there'd be an inquest, wouldn't there? You know, it's just kind of a. But then, I mean, it's really difficult for, you know, my kids' generation. They're like early 20s, to conceive of the idea that. For some, if you got in trouble at school and went back home and said it, you get at home for getting in trouble, you know, completely.
Yeah.
So, and I think you're right. It's that thing of the teachers didn't, you know, have any kind of welfare concern for him. They just went, okay.
That was it. And the thing then, we got a little bit more about Tracy and Dwayne, because Tracy then said to him, "Well, I'll walk to school with you if you haven't got your bike and all that." And they were like a bit like an old married couple, weren't they? You know, they'd obviously, I think we found out sort of like their mums had been friends, so they'd kind of always grown up together.
Yeah.
And there's a bit where they're talking about clubs they want to go to, and Tracy wants to go to drama club, Dwayne wanted to go to judo club, and Tracy sort of rolled her eyes, and Dwayne's response was, "Oh, all right then." And you just look at them and you just think, it's just a married couple. He just wants an easy life.
it's so sweet. I thought those, you know, that relationship between those two was really, I thought it was, you're absolutely right, it's like an old married couple. Yeah,
definitely. And like the kids used to give them stick, didn't they, as well, you know, about being boyfriend and girlfriend. And I don't think there was ever that. I think they were just really good mates, weren't they? There was never a romantic side to it.
I think there was a deep affection for each other. But I think it was more brother and sister than boyfriend and girlfriend.
Definitely. And again, that sort of shows in other bits where Tracy ended up going to the drama club and Dwayne never went because he was making new friends and he just wants to be with the lads. Like, again, like what happens in a relationship. Like, and Tracy didn't seem to know how to handle that. Because I think because they had always been mates and they'd done everything together, and all of a sudden, Dwayne had these new mates that he was knocking about with, and she didn't really know.
But that's the thing, I don't think she did know what to do, because it had always been those two.
Yeah. And then there was a bit then, because obviously then Tracy was aware of, you know, what was going on in Dwayne's home life and stuff. And there's a bit where Dwayne gets paint spilled on his coat, and he's just panicking because he just thinks, if I go home with this paint on my coat, you know, what's going to happen with my dad? And Tracy offered to help him out there and took it to, there was a painter in the school, she took it to him and asked
the
him if he
decorated. Yeah,
asked him if he'd do it, because she was really worried for Dwayne. She was worried that he'd get another black eye, and he said, "Yeah, okay, I can see why you." And I thought that's a really nice thing that the decorator at the time goes, yeah, I can see that you don't want that to happen. So there was that bit of welfare there,
yeah.
Which probably should have been coming from the teachers, to be honest.
Right. And you would think, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
From that. But I don't know. I thought it was really, I think it's those things that he did so well.
Yeah.
And it was the time it was, the type of things that were made for children.
Yeah.
You know, anything with any realism, I suppose, was oh no, that's not good for children to watch.
Yeah.
It's like, we'll uphold the fantasy that life is bed of roses. And I don't know how, you know, Grange Hill got commissioned, because it from the start was always, you know, this is what is really going on in schools.
Yeah.
This is what's going on in people's homes. This is the relationships. These are the relationships that people are having. And I mean, that's why it was so successful. But I'm, you know, you think about it now, how, what could you make now that would be able to break new ground?
Yeah.
Like that? I don't think
it's
much.
I mean, and Dwayne did apologise to Tracy when she got the coat fixed, and he said he would go to drama club with her, but she said, it's okay, I'll go with Karen and Sally, and you can go with Pogo Patterson. And I mean, Pogo Patterson, what a legend as well.
Oh, no. I know.
Peter Moran plays a cracking part there, especially in the younger years, because Pogo was horrible. he was so obnoxious when he was younger. And then there's a bit where there's quite a few bits where we saw you in sort of PE lessons, and there's one where you're playing rounders, and we see Tracy get hit the ball and get a round out. Were you sporty as well?
Do you know what? I was telling this story last night.
Right, okay.
I never. I used to dance, so I was never allowed to horse ride, run. I was never allowed to do those, because you develop muscles in ways there. And I'm an ambassador for breast cancer now. That at that point, they were going to be the main charity for the London Marathon. And said, would you, you know, help out? Would you be interested in doing it? And I went, come on then. I came home and told my husband, and he rolled his eyes. That's all I needed.
Right. That's
all I needed. I am so stubborn because of that. So, but it turned out it was my birthday, my 45th birthday on the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, breast cancer now, we're with the charity. And I doing interviews beforehand, and they were saying, have you, you know, what kind of, are you much of a runner? And I said, I've never run before. And someone, and the journalist said, what, not even cross country? And I went, oh, no. Yeah, I think I did cross country at school, but I'm not much.
Right.
And then once I got home, my husband said, you haven't. That was a scene in Grange Hill. I was like, oh my God.
Amazing.
That was the rounders scene.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
So, no. I mean, I was. I used to ice skate. I used to live in South London. So I used to ice skate at Streatham Ice Rink every morning.
Brilliant. And then there's another PE lesson that I need to talk about, because it's where Sally fell off the equipment. And Tracy had to go and tell the officer to ring for an ambulance. And then Tracy and Anita were talking about what had happened. And Anita was convinced that Sally had died. Right. And she said to her that she was telling her gran about it. And she said, and her gran said to her, well, that proves that doing gym is bad for you. to which Tracy replies, well, your gran's a flipping head case. And I just think, that just seemed really out of character for Tracy, you know, for like, especially with the girls. Maybe if Dwayne had said it, she'd have said it. But with the others, she didn't seem like that. But I just love that. Your gran's a flipping head case. And then you mentioned earlier about there was the theme running through that series of the bikes getting pinched. And it was Tracy, Karen, and I think it was Jane when investigating to find out.
Yeah.
So, like...
ourselves as Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, like that, yeah. Because that happened a lot in kids' TV back then, didn't it? If there was something going on, there was always a group of kids that would find out whether it was the Famous Five or the Red Ant Gang or someone like that. They would always do that. And they actually went to the bike shop where they sold secondhand bikes, and they actually found Dwayne's bike.
Properly investigated.
Yeah, properly investigated. But the shop owner sold it. It was sold, but Tracy didn't believe that that it had been. But when they took Dwayne to the shop, the owner had got rid of it. And also at that time, around that time, Tracy and Dwayne saw Mr. Sutcliffe and Miss Mooney holding hands and going into a jeweler's shop. And Tracy was really excited, but Dwayne couldn't care less. He couldn't care less. And obviously, Tracy was telling everyone, and Dwayne was just like, I don't care. I don't care.
Do you know what? One of the lovely things about... doing Holby and Casualty is you come across people again after such a long time. So Miss Mooney came, Mr. Baxter. I mean, almost everyone really came through those emergency doors. So that was really lovely. I mean, she didn't look any different.
No, do you know when you see them though? Do you not regress or anything like that? Do you suddenly think, oh my God, there's a teacher from Grange Hill?
No, it makes me feel old because they don't look any different. But they look closer to my age now. It's just like, oh no, I must be really old.
Oh.
But it was lovely seeing them again. I went for a meeting for a film with Rafe Fiennes.
Right.
And Rafe was in the room. He was, you know, reading with me. And he just said, "We so love you in our house." And I was like, oh my God, Rafe Fiennes actually knows who I am. Oh my God, I think I'm going to die. He says, "Yeah, we really love you because, you know, my wife," he was married to Alex Kingston at the time. "The bike thief." So, that's how he knew me. So.
Brilliant. Because the bike storyline all came to a bit of a head where the kids had been to the park for a science lesson.
Field trip.
Yeah. So they've done it and they've gone out and the teacher wants to...
I don't
to,
know where I'm dragging this from.
Comes from the recesses there, yeah. The teacher wants them to find something that they could write about. She said whether it be an insect or a leaf or something like that. But the kids all decide that they're going to go and hide from it straight away. But there's a bit where Tracy's climbing a tree and she seems to get stuck and she starts laughing about it. And I think you're genuinely laughing at the fact that you start to climb in this tree and you can't get up. And I love the fact that it's been left in. I love that.
It didn't go. I thought I was going to do my action woman thing. It's like, no, I'm stuck. This is so embarrassing. So that did actually happen.
And on their way back, Tracy's class and Tucker's class had up because they'd been out on a cross country run, I think it was. And they end up catching the bike thieves. And I noticed that Tracy gets a sly smack in on the bike thief once they've caught her. And I was just wondering if you knew that you'd done that one. Just seems to be a little sly smack when she gets caught.
How can I not remember that? I was a tomboy. I was always action and I'm surprised. I'm going to have to go back and have a look at that.
Brilliant. There's a cookery lesson. We talked about Pogo Patterson earlier on. And there's a cookery lesson where Tracy makes a mistake with
when she's melting the chocolate, instead of boiling the water and putting the bowl over it, she pours the boiling water in with the chocolate because you were making chocolate cakes. And Pogo makes fun of it. So Karen comes to Tracy's rescue and they end up putting salt in Pogo's melted chocolate. And there's another bit where Tracy's talking to the girls and she starts telling them a joke. I don't know if you can remember what the joke was, but it is one of the oldest, corniest jokes that I can remember. Ooh. It's to do with school.
Oh, it's the teacher. I don't want to go to school.
Yeah, that's the one. Oh, I love the fact that you can remember that joke. You've got to go to school. You're the headmaster. That one. Yeah. Brilliant. And then...
I'm just so surprised. You are just the deep of my mind you're pulling these things from.
Let's see if you can remember this then. So Pogo broke Karen's toast rack in the woodwork lesson. So Tracy and Karen asked two older girls for help to get him back. I wonder if you can remember what the girls did to Pogo.
Oh. No, but I had that toast rack. My parents had that toast rack.
Wow.
Until, I mean, probably 5 years ago.
Wow.
They kept it.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I loved that thing. It was about the art department made it and I put the glue the last bit on. I still feel like I
did. Yeah, that's yours. You definitely did that. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So what they did was to get Pogo back was they pinned him down in the cloakroom and they pinched his trousers.
Oh yes.
And I have to say, he definitely deserved it. Definitely, definitely deserved it.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Now, we talked about, the realism that Grangeill covered. And there was a bit of a darker storyline that Tracy was involved with. And it was more Tracy's mum. Because, I don't know if you remember, Dwayne and Michael wanted to enter a competition to win a minibus for the school. And they went round to Tracy's for help. And when Tracy's mum came home, it became very, very apparent that she didn't want Michael in the house because he was black.
Yeah.
And again, on kids' telly, I'm not sure if it, something like... Because obviously Michael had the older brother, Benny, so there'd been a little bit. There was name calling and stuff like that, but it was usually like the kids to each other. I don't think it had ever been an adult to showing the prejudice to a child. And again, it really sort of really groundbreaking stuff for a kids' TV programme to be showing that.
It didn't shy away from it.
No.
I mean, yeah. And but that's why I say I think it was so good for that because it didn't slam it in your face, but it didn't ignore that those things were going on. And it's really difficult for kids to understand that, you know, a mixed race, half Irish, three quarters, you know, the rest of West African and a bit of something else. But to be walking your dog past a window that said no blacks, no Irish, no dogs.
Yeah.
And that's quite a frequent thing.
Yeah.
I think kids think you're making it up. It was horrendous, really.
Yeah.
But it's what was accepted. That was the...
Yeah, I do think that. I think it was a lot more accepted than it obviously it is now, you know. And it went on, didn't it?
It was just awful. It was just awful.
Yeah.
But I was really pleased Grangeill, you know, didn't.
Yeah.
Paint pretty pictures over things like that.
Definitely, definitely not. But then it was half term when this was going on. And Tracy has the bright idea then. They can go and get the answers to the competition by breaking into the school and going into the school library. Now, they weren't really breaking in because the door was open because they'd seen Mr. Keaton going. Mr. Keaton played by Robert Hartley, and again, another legend with possibly the best voice in the history of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Can I just ask, what was the relationship like between the kids and the adults?
I think a lot of the time you do have those separate worlds, really, because as one of the pupils, your interaction, most of your working day is done with, you know, your classmates or whoever you have that relationship with. So unless you had longer, more regular scenes with the teachers, there were two kind of separate camps, really, but they were lovely.
I mean, I think back then, the teachers were used sort of on the periphery. You know, they were used to move scenes along more than anything. It was all later on that some were given their own sorts of storylines, but I think in the early days, definitely along for to help move the scenes along. Okay, and then in the end, the kids got loads of old newspapers to enter the competition, so they'd have more chance of winning. But because they'd been caught in the school by Mr. Hartley, they had to go to his office. Mr. Keaton, sorry. They had to go to the office and find out what their fate was going to be. They were expected to get into a lot of trouble. Dwayne didn't tell the truth. Michael didn't tell the truth. But Tracy did. They were still weren't sure what was going to happen. And in the end, someone from the newspaper came and they didn't win the minibus because they were a day or two past the entry, the close, when you had to post competition entries.
Oh, of course.
But because they liked the story of what the kids had done, so they ended up getting an interview for the newspaper. I was watching this the other day and I didn't quite understand because Mr. Keaton said, "I won't tell your parents what happened, but you tell this man from the newspaper." But anyway, they did get the article written about them, and then there was a bit where we move on again and Kathy and Tricia appeared to be bullying the little kids. There's a bit where you see them speak to Tracy and they say, "Where's that 10p? We wanted that 10p in for today." And you look at it and you think, are they really bullying? But what it was, we go back to when Tracy had seen Mr. Sutcliffe and Miss Mooney going into the jewelry shop. They had got engaged and they were getting a present from the kids for the pair of them. And then we never saw Tracy again after that. Can I ask why that was?
They did ask me to do the next series. And then I think my agent at the time, because Grainger was so massive, she said, "What you don't want to do is get too tied up in that character, because then, you know, it'll be difficult. People will find it difficult to cast you in other things because you're very much the face of." So, really reluctantly, I took her advice, which I kind of thought, at the time I didn't immediately get another job. So I was a bit like, the wrong thing. And then I ended up doing Murphy's Mob.
Brilliant. Murphy's Mob, right? It's one of those programs that it seems to have passed me by. And I've been trying to think why it was. I saw one of those things I saw occasionally, and I'm trying to think, was it because it was on at the same time as the news, and you know, it was one of them where my parents or my nan would be watching, you know, so I didn't get to see it. But you played Sheila in Murphy's Mob. Was that right? Is that what the character was called, or have I made that up? I don't know. No.
Ask my husband. But you characters did. Names. I never.
I was looking at the other people who were in that, because like Linda Bellingham was there and Keith Jane, who was a proper kids TV legend, wasn't he? You know, sticking the thump. But Wayne Norman, obviously
Pickles
from Grangehill, and I love the fact that everyone calls him Pickles as well. I love that. Like,
you know what? I really do have to think of his name. It's just like everyone calls him Pickles.
Yeah. And, you know, Milton John's another one. Milton John's is probably the person I remember more from Murphy's Mob than anyone else.
Also, you've got to think about Murphy was Ken...
Oh, yeah, Ken Hutchinson.
Ken Hutchinson. This is massive, kind of the Grapes of Wrath lead actor. Yeah. And Terrence... I was to say Terrence Stamp, but it wasn't Terrence Stamp. Oh, God, Terrence is going to really have a go at me now. I'm really bad at names. But he's like a fantastic Shakespearean actor. You've got Linda Bellingham. You know, it was just an amazing cast.
Was it Wofford? Was it filmed that?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Oh, John.
It was, what were they called? Dunsmore United, wasn't it? Yeah. And then, you know, I've made notes of a few other things that you were in. So, like Relative Strangers, is that right, with Matthew Kelly and Mark Farmer, who was, you know, from Grange Hill, Gary Hargreaves.
Yeah.
And Jamie Foreman, I've got down. Yeah. Down
there was, growing up, you have to understand, as a child actor, particularly, you know, in London, there's a whole crowd of us that grew up, you know, Dexter Fletcher, Kathy Burke, you know, we all grew Pickles, we all grew up together. Yeah. There's a whole kind of Red Lion. There's a load of us that the Anna Scher lot. I'm a South London girl, so it's going to be working with Pickles and everyone that I end up going to the Red Lion because that was a theatre pub in Islington, still there.
Yeah.
But we all used to meet on a Friday. Yeah. And so there's a whole gang of us.
Yeah. Is it right that you worked with Christoph Waltz as well?
Oh, he's so lovely.
In the gravy train, was it? Yeah. And Ian Richardson and Alexi Sale as well. I mean, the legendary names there.
Alexi was lovely. And he was really quite nervous because obviously this was, you know, full on high-degree kind of cast. And he was. He was really quite nervous about it, but I thought he was wonderful. But Christoph Waltz was so lovely, very, very quiet man. And there was, which was, the way it was back then, if you were an actress under the age of 30, you probably would be the mistress or the girlfriend, and you would have to get your top off on this or film a sex scene or whatever. You know, that's the way it was then. But there was this scene in the gravy train where it says, so and so, again, can't remember the character's name, plays table tennis topless. And I went to the director, why? No. No, I'm not doing this. And he said, it's showing how free she is. And I'm like, that, playing table tennis topless, is not saying that she's free. I said, I don't mind doing those things.
Yeah.
If there's some validation behind it.
Yeah.
If there's a reason, but your reasoning is not enough. I tried and tried and tried with him. And then I think one lunchtime, Christoph said, are you okay? And I said, oh, I'm just frustrated with this. He just went, mm-hmm. Put his plate down, went off. That's it. Went back on, you know, that afternoon, carried on filming. And a very sheepish director came up to me and said, yes, having considered what you said, yes, we're going to drop that scene. What I eventually heard was, Christoph, you can't do that. You can't do that. And that's all he needed to do. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't ask him to do that. I didn't suggest that he could go and, but he was, I thought that was such a lovely and very subtle, very dignified way of doing something. So bless him. So I will always hold a candle in my heart for him.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, you mentioned Alan Bleasdale earlier on. You've done quite a lot of Alan Bleasdale stuff, haven't you? I mean, what a storyteller he is anyway. Brilliant.
The first job, I was GBH.
Yeah.
I went for the casting, and just before going in, my agent said to me, Bleasdale's going to be there. I went, started having panic attacks. And I was like, oh my God, can't. And probably about, I don't know, about 10 years afterwards, he said to me, you walked in, we read. He said, when you left, I got up and told the casting director to cancel everyone else.
Wow.
And I was just like, what?
Amazing.
Oh, yeah, I just knew it.
Wow.
But then I was really privileged to become part of his kind of rep company. Robert Lindsay, just Julie Walters.
Yeah.
Michael Palin.
Yeah, brilliant.
There was just a rep of us, and he is a loyal person, which, you know, just doesn't happen.
Because GBH was a massive thing. I remember that coming out, and it was everywhere, wasn't it? It was, you know, the publicity for that was huge as well. And I think that's probably the first time that I was 91 when I was 16, so that was the first time I'd really sort of noticed sort of Alan Bleasdale, and it was the first time I'd seen Michael Palin in something other than Monty Python. Or Traveling Around the World, you know. So it was a big thing for me, that as well. But because you were,
I just went up to, because, you know, Boys in the Black stuff, Alan has been asked by everyone over the years to adapt his work, and he's like, no. And then I said to him, if you'd have asked me the one writer that is worthy of doing it, I would have chosen James Graham as well.
Uh-huh.
And so James Graham's done the adaptation of Boys from the Black stuff.
Yeah.
And it's got Drew Schofield in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, oh my God. It's that thing, it's just, only scousers can do it. Make you laugh and cry in the same breath.
I missed it. It was on recently, wasn't it? And my mum went to see it because I loved it. I loved the program. But again, I was too young when it was first on, so I've seen it, come back to it later. And like you say, there's parts of it which are hilarious and there's parts which are just so bleak
Also the fact that, you know, we were talking about it, the fact that, you know, it's 40 years on and the same issues are still there. We've, you know, strikes, pay gap, you know, it's just, but it's, it will transfer to, you know, I think it's finished now, but it's just beg, borrow, or steal to get to see it.
Because because you did Blood on the Dole as well.
I did do Blood on the Dole.
Now,
you know what really annoyed me?
Go on.
There was, Alan Bleasdale Presents or whatever, and there were four or five productions for new writers, producers, directors, whatever. And I think I did three out of the four or five, except the one that was in the Caribbean. I get Brighton Beach, and everyone else gets the Caribbean.
Nah. No, the only reason I brought up Blood on the Dole was because, and I don't know how many people would notice about me, I auditioned for Blood on the Dole. It was a really small part, but again, Alan Bleasdale was in the room when I did it, and it was the part of, there was the two girls, and there was the girl that went off with the teacher.
Yeah.
And it was the other girl, it was the boyfriend that she had. And when I saw it, I watched that with me mum and me dad, and we all said, I'm glad that I never got that part. For one of the things that you can probably, you know, use your imagination as to what they were getting up to.
Yeah.
But that's like the only thing I've ever auditioned for. I was auditioning for Blood on the Dole. Yeah. Now, and
one of the other ones was Requiem Apache, and It had, I think, yeah, I think it was Requiem that had Alfred Molina.
Well,
Julie Walters. I was doing a scene with Julie Walters.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't get through the scene because I was laughing. She's playing this faded kind of actress. And she was drinking this soup, but it was spilled before it hit her mouth.
Right.
As she was talking, and I literally could not get through this scene. She's, yeah. I love Julie.
Yeah.
But, oh, she,
do you get that though? Do you ever think like, what, how am I going to do this? How am I going to get through this scene? Do you know when you start corpsing that much?
And once you start, it's like giggling in class. You know it's wrong.
Yeah.
That makes you laugh even more. It's like that. I'm dreadful.
And you were in Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah.
Now, did you have any idea how big that was going to become?
Not absolutely, you know, what it ended up being. But yes, in terms of, it was one of the first scripts in a very, very, very long time where I laughed out loud.
Right. Wow.
And I think that's why they got the cast they did, because everyone just went, I'll play second tree from the left.
Yeah.
I don't care. I've just got to do this. It was, yeah. It was just a brilliant script. So we knew it was going to be good.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest film of 94.
No one knew it would be like that.
Wow.
No.
That's it. Because your character, I believe, was called Naughty Nicky.
Naughty Nicky, yeah.
let's not say any more on that one, just in case. you mentioned Jake's Progress and Alan Bleasdale and Robert Lindsay again and Julie Walters, who you've just talked about there. But you've done so much, and you say you don't get intimidated, but do you ever get starstruck with any of the people that you work with? I mean, I suppose it must be different when they become your contemporaries anyway, but...
Well, it's, you're just there doing a job.
Yeah.
And because it is my day job and always has been, I can't... I'm trying to think if there's anyone that I've been starstruck by. I think I get more... I'm more impressed by people who have a really good integrity, follow that through, do good work, you know, not outside of what I do, you know.
Yeah.
That is more impressive
to me
than, you know, turning up.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fair enough. I've asked a few people that who've done, you know, as much as you have. Like, so I just want to know. Like,
it's a really interesting question that I'm desperately trying to think of. I think there must be. I really can't think of.
Right. Okay. No, that's all right.
I can't think of anyone.
No. I mean, because I obviously, like, not being in the industry, like, you know, I look at names that you've worked with, the likes of Jasper Carrotton, Robert Powell and the detectives, which must have been a ball anyway. to make, like...
Absolute ball. And I love Robert Powell.
Yeah.
Because he came on to Holby as a regular.
Right.
And I quite often go, right, Jesus wants a cup of tea. Can we get Jesus a cup of tea?
Yeah, and it's okay. So you've mentioned it a couple of times there, Holby and Casualty, Connie Beecham. I've got it down here on IMDb, which again, if anyone who listens to this will get bored of me saying this. I know it's not the most reliable source of information, IMDb, but that's got you listed down. 293 episodes of Holby.
Oh, really?
That's what it's got, and I don't know how true it is. 200. Well, you're in both. You didn't hold behind Casualty, and then over 200 episodes of Casualty again. I don't know how true that is, but that is a lot. I mean, do you find that that's what people know you for the most?
I think because because she was such a standout character, and then, you know, being in people's living rooms week after week, year on year, then that had become the character that, that people kind of recognize and remember most. But she's, I loved Connie.
Yeah.
I loved her. She said the things I'd love to say. And, you know, I loved her.
Brilliant.
I did try the Connie stare on my kids, but they just laughed. my life.
No, I mean, like you say,
work on a herd of cows. I swear to God, I was walking my dog. We were walking through the fields, and then I thought I'd kind of be able to skirt round this field because the cows were over there. But they suddenly came, kind of in towards us, and what I thought was a gate was just the corner of this. And I was literally boxed in, and I just started to panic, and then I just turned around and went, "That's enough!" And they literally stopped. It's like a like cattle prod. They just went, "Oh, I wish there'd been someone here filming that."
I don't know what that says about you, to be honest.
It wasn't me. I just used Connie.
You just used Connie there, yeah. Because you also directed Casualty as well. But you've done quite a bit of directing as well. And is it weird making that jump from being in the cast to then suddenly being in charge, if you know what I mean?
No, not really. I suppose that the privilege of having worked on Casualty and Holby, but Casualty particularly, was being so familiar with my character that I was free to look at the big picture. And with a lot of directors, not new directors, but new to the show, it's not, you've got drama and then you've got medical on top of that. And that's the medical stuff is a real headache.
Right.
And even the medical advisors would go, "Oh, we've got a new cast member. Leave her to Amanda."
Right, okay.
Because I'd learned over the years, you really did help so much. But in terms of the directing, I would easily be able to go, well, if you do it from here and do this, then you've got your shot here, and then we can do that shot there. So it was always evolving, and I'd always paid an interest in, you know, all the directors I worked with. Why are you doing that? How do you do this? What, you know, camera, what lenses, why, what does it do? So it seems to have always been in the back of my mind anyway. It's quite a natural thing. But it was, I mean, I've had so many. And recently with Waterloo Road, bumping into a couple of them and just saying the joy of having an actor direct.
Right, yeah.
Because I speak the language, but also respect the journey that they need to do. You know, lighting's given, you know, half an hour. Cameras are given, you know, however long they need. The actors, first block film.
Yeah.
No, that's not. You tell me when you're ready.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they give their best. And then it actually, it's if more people came, you know, production came down on the floor, you'd see actually it's cost effective.
Yeah.
People the time to rehearse and find the thing, then you can shoot it in one.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, retake after retake after retake. So, I love directing. I love it.
Right, yeah. Because I've looked, you've done quite a bit there. You did Corrie as well.
Did the cobbles.
Yeah, and you've also been, where you've been director, you've been the producer of a couple of bits as well. And I think it was Sarah Sugarman when she was on, and I was asking her, is that just so you give yourself two wages on that one? Or is it?
Usually you don't get a wage.
No, right, okay. Fair enough. Now, it would be remiss of me talking to you to not mention your best mate and not talk about Paul O'Grady. Obviously, he's from around these parts, a little bit further away. He's from over the water, as we say up here. But I've got to ask, how did he become your best mate? How did that happen there? Like,
well, we were always kind of, we knew each other from around.
Yeah.
But never really kind of spent time with each other. But apparently, his version
right, okay.
is... We were doing a play, and there was a read through. So there's a big circle of chairs. He said, "I flounced in late, plonked myself down next to him, dragged on a cigarette like Marlene Dietrich, and said, 'I fucking hate read throughs.' And he said, 'I fell in love,' and that was it."
Wow.
And I think that is exactly what I did, actually. We were inseparable from that.
Yeah.
Literally inseparable.
Yeah. I mean, because I remember the first sort of inkling that I remember having that you knew each other was from the Comic Relief video for, I'm going to be 500 miles with Peter
Kay and
Matt Lucas. And I remember it was either my mum or my sister said, "That's her off Holby City," right? And that's what your name came up as in the credits.
Yeah.
Hair off Holby City. I mean, that's it. Peter Kay must have known that that's what people were going to say. Hair off Holby City. But the thing with, you know, when Paul O'Grady passed away was just everyone said the same things about him. And that says to me, what you saw was what you got. You know, there clearly wasn't a side to him at all.
It was my sister who said, "This is like Princess Di again."
Yeah.
You know, and there was a national grief. Mm-hmm. And almost every message, and there were thousands and thousands, were all saying the same thing. I didn't know him, but I felt like I've lost my best friend. I didn't quite my... dad's funeral, but I'm shedding a tear now. But everyone, because that was him.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you get found out very quickly if you fake that stuff.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
And his passion for animals, I mean, he was always, I used to say, "You're like Dr. Doolittle." He'd literally talk. He lived in Vicky Mansions. We lived in Stockwell. We were like round the corner from each other. Uh-huh. And I go, "Who are you talking to?" And you're like, "A cat or the parakeet." And I go, "How are you doing? What's going on?" And the whichever creature it was would answer. Yeah. It was just absolutely incredible. So it was quite a natural thing for him to do Brassy Dogs Home.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what he's done for them. The not just that, but for rehoming pets and things.
Yeah.
People will think of that first now before buying a new dog. So yeah. It's just, but that was just him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I obviously remember him from Lily Savage. And then, 'cause I remember thinking, Is he putting that voice on when he does Lily Savage? And he clearly wasn't. his voice was Lily Savage's voice was Paul O'Grady's voice, wasn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. And it was, they were very close. he was really, really, really nervous just before the first series of the Travel program aired. He was like, "What if people don't like me? What if they like Lily?"
Yeah.
And I just kept saying, "Are you It's absolutely the opposite, because what people will understand is it's your wit, your intellect, you know, it's that. It's not a group of writers coming up with this stuff. But also, people think that the Lily's stories were, you know, just him sitting at a typewriter. And they are 99.9% true.
Wow.
Because he's godfather to my eldest, Milo. Both the boys were young, he said, let's take him to Euro Disney. Well, I was a bit like, what? Are you serious? Are you on drugs at the moment? And he went, no, let's take him. It'd be nice. We'll do this. And we'll take them here. And anyway, bitched and moaned for the entire... It was a nightmare. It was just horrendous. But at the end, I just wanted to use up some of the money in the souvenir shop and go. Three people stepped in front of me at the till. The fourth one went to do it, and I said, really politely, I said, I'm really sorry. I just want to pay for this and go. And the guy, snotty guy, just started off on me and then just said, why don't you go back to your own country? So I came out the shop with a face like thunder, and he went, Savage went, what? I'm not telling you. Oh, you are the last person I'm going to tell, because I know what you're going to do. He went, what? So I told him. He went back into the middle of the shop at full voice going, go back to your own country. Shame you didn't have balls when the Germans were here. If it wasn't for us, you'd all be speaking German. 10 minutes. 10 minutes. Of course, all the Brits are howling with laughter. All the Europeans going, this man is a lunatic. Do we call security? Anyway, I, out of politeness, never tell that story outside friends and family. And then the week after he died, my sister sent me a little clip. She said, have you seen this? It's Lily on Parkinson, and he tells that story. I've been polite and not told that story. And you not only retell it, but you, on Parky. But the thing is, people will think, oh, another Lily Savage made up story. It's like, no, mate, I was there.
Oh, wow.
That's my children.
Excellent.
So those things were all him.
Wow. They were
things that happened. You know, I've woken up, I've been at his house, woken up in the morning going, what's that noise? The cow was in the kitchen eating yesterday's birthday cake. These things happen. That was his life. So they weren't stories, and they weren't kind of
Brilliant. So can I ask then, obviously you're well involved in the industry still, but have you got anything sort of coming up lately that you're allowed to tell us about?
Not really. No, I'm really superstitious, so you jinx things.
Right, okay. I don't want to jinx anything.
Yeah. But I'm directing a couple of things, which I'm really excited about.
Yep.
And I can't say.
All right, that's fine.
I'll let you know.
Okay.
Once the ink's dry, then I'll let you know.
Marvellous. Okay, so, Amanda, we are coming towards the end of the interview, and I've just got a few final questions for you. They're the same questions that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, and they're all Grange Hill related, but don't worry, it's not a quiz. I'm not going to test your knowledge or anything like that. You made it quite clear before we started.
But I'm surprised how much I
have. You've done really well. So the last year and earlier this year, there's been talk of a Grange Hill movie in the works.
Yeah.
What do you think of the idea of a Grange Hill movie?
Well, I was thinking about that today, actually, because I think it's like that remaking of Mission Impossible, which I love those films. Yeah. But you kind of thought at the beginning, I watched the original kind of Mission Impossible and they were really cheesy TV things. So I think it's going to be brilliant, and it's going to be something completely kind of different. It's not, it will have the title, have the ethos and that kind of rawness to it.
Yeah.
But I think we'll see something quite brilliant.
Brilliant, especially if, you know, Phil Redmond is writing it, because he's not going to let it be something he doesn't want it to be, is he? Yeah. Definitely not. And if you were asked, would we see a return of Tracy Edwards?
Yes! I'm really upset they haven't asked me.
Brilliant, but you'd need to get the hair back.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry. This is the tamed hair straightener version. So
right, okay. Okay, and you said earlier on that you were a massive fan of the programme. So who was your favourite character in Grange Hill?
I think Tucker.
Yeah.
I think Tucker, because he just embodied a lot of things.
Yeah.
At that time. And yeah, I think Todd Carty brought so much to it.
Yeah.
He's still the standout character, really, I think.
Right. And if you couldn't have played Tracy, was there another character that you would have liked to have played?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, all right.
I like Tracy.
Yeah.
I would have preferred her to be a bit more naughty, but
I think that I think the thing with Tracy was, for what? Because it was the second intake of kids that joined. She was very different to like the other character, the likes of Trisha Yates. She was very different to Trisha. She was different to Kathy Hargreaves. You know, she was different to the other characters that we had. Okay, then. So the final question then is, why do you think there is still such affection for Grange Hill?
Because it was seminal. It was the first of its kind. It broke down barriers and represented us kids.
Yeah.
In a way that we recognized, not what our parents wanted to believe. But
yeah, yeah.
You know, that was school life for a lot of us. You know, the good stuff and the bad stuff. But up until then, you know, TV shows had only shown the Enid Blyton version of
yeah.
life. And
Brilliant.
It just wasn't like that. We were all, as in life, we're all a little bit naughty.
Yeah. Oh, great. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for coming on to Sausage on a Fork and giving us your experience, you know, your tales on your experiences and remembering stuff.
Brilliant.
As well.
Well done you for doing this. There is a massive community out there, you know, those of us of a certain age, you know, it was a big part of our childhood. And the fact that you're keeping this going and, you know, keeping the memories alive, and it's really good work for you. Though.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been brilliant talking to you. And to anyone that's listening, I'll speak to you next time. Cheers. Thanks. Okay. Bye-bye.